doing Navi, we're up to the book Shmuel, the 16th chapter. We had learned about how Yishai and his wife had parted ways, and then she tricked him and came back. And then when David was born, so there were questions about David's lineage, and he was always odd man out, and then Shmuel came, and and then he summons Yishai, and he asks to bring the children before him. And when the first child is brought before him, Eliav, so he says, wow, I see the anointed one of Hashem. And Hashem tells him, don't look at his good looks. Don't look at his height. I hate him. I don't see people the way you see people. I despise him. Yikes. What's wrong with him? Why did God despise him? So our sages say, we will see later on how he treats David, how he scorns David. He asks him, I know your evil heart, he says to David. Where'd you leave the sheep? You only came out here to see action. You want to see people killing other people. Our sages say, why did he speak that way to David? Because he was arrogant. Because he was arrogant, Hashem says, I despise him. Hashem doesn't like arrogant people. So, why was this happening? That Shmuel would see the first son and think this was it? And then Hashem says, no. And then the second son, and Hashem says, no. And this goes on for all six kids. And our sages say the reason it played itself out this way was because 2 years earlier, when Shaul had come and asked, where is the seer? So Shmuel said, I am the seer. And our sages say, Shmuel shouldn't have worded it that way. Hashem is the seer. He is Hashem's messenger. He shouldn't have said it that way. There was a little bit of element where it was inappropriate to speak that way. And that is why Hashem showed him that he doesn't see. So after all six kids pass, so 7 kids pass. So Shmuel says to Yishai, are you finished with all your kids? So now Yishai gets scared. He says, now Shmuel is going to tell me what happened. And now in front of everyone, I'm going to be so embarrassed. And Yishai and all the kids get real scared. And Yishai says, there's still a little one. He's out watching the sheep. So Shmuel says, bring him here. We're not leaving till he comes. So they summon David. And when David comes, Shmuel looks up and sees David and his red skin, and a chill runs down his spine. And he says, that looks like a murderer to me. And Hashem tells him, that's the one, because he has beautiful eyes. Don't look at the fact that he can kill. Look at the fact that he will only kill based on beautiful eyes, based on the eyes of the halacha, based on the eyes of the Torah. He's going to have a job to fight wars, but he will not kill people incorrectly. He will do the task a king is supposed to do with the eyes of the Sanhedrin. That's why it's described that he had red skin, but he had beautiful eyes. Hashem says, go anoint him. Shmuel suddenly is stuck to his seat. This isn't what he was expecting. He looks at him and he thinks, I see Esav. And Hashem says to him, no, you see the leadership of the Jewish people. Go anoint him. So he tells Shmuel, get up. And Shmuel goes and he anoints him. And from that day onward, Hashem's spirit rests on David. What does that mean, Hashem's spirit rests on David? The Rambam writes in the second section of Moreh Nevuchim, the 45th chapter, the Rambam writes there are 8 stages to a Navi getting prophecy. The first stage to a prophet being able to attain prophecy is what is described here about David. Hashem's spirit rests upon him. What does that mean? That he has an inner drive to fight for justice. Hashem propels him to the point where he cannot stand watching injustices. And this is why in last week's parsha, Moshe intervenes when an Egyptian is beating a Jew, when a Jew is beating a Jew, when a non-Jew is beating a non-Jew. Be it the first story of the Egyptian beating the Jewish worker, the second story of Datan and Aviram, the two brothers fighting, the third story of the shepherds, non-Jewish shepherds, the daughters of Jethro, non-Jewish women. Why is Moshe getting involved? Because he has that beginning of prophecy where he cannot stand watching injustice. Hashem has given him a drive to do things that will be great on behalf of individuals and on behalf of the masses. There is now a drive within David to lead to positive change on behalf of people. And that, says the Rambam, is step one of the eight introductory steps to getting nevuah, to getting prophecy. So Hashem settles on Shmuel, on David, and Shmuel leaves. And now Shaul is plagued with depression. The Navi calls it Ruach Ra, the spirit of evil. But the commentaries write, the Abarbanel and others, they write the word melancholy. We know what that is, melancholy, sadness. It seems to be a type of depression that would plague Shaul. And here the Navi says it was Hashem's leaving him. I don't understand Shaul. I don't know how a person lives on this planet when God says to him, I'm your enemy. What chance do I have? What am I supposed to do now? I see in Shmuel's depression the most natural thing in the world. And on the contrary, I think from Shmuel we could learn how great a person can be in spite of fighting depression. Shaul is going to lead the Jewish people to victory after victory. He is going to continue being modest. He is going to continue being dedicated. He will be faced with challenges of servants that egg him on. Go fight David. He's trying to usurp you. He's going to be plagued with Lashon Hara. Even David's own tribesmen, the Zifim, who live in the Judean desert, come and tell Shaul, we'll help you. He has Doeg, who keeps telling him, I can tell you another bad thing about David. And in spite of all that, he's dedicated to the people. He has continuous victories, and he will fight to the end on behalf of the Jewish people. We will learn the parashiyah of Shaul's final days with a tremendous respect for this first king of the Jewish people. We often visit this story and see his weaknesses. We have to see within it his greatness. If there are people in Jewish history who I don't understand simply because they are giants, Shaul is one of them. He takes a very high ranking up there. From his first war, when he was outnumbered over 100-1, I don't understand how man goes to such a war, to his final days, where he has to live with the knowledge that Hashem is upsetting him and he can't undo it. We move on. So, yes. Let's talk about it when we get there. So, his servants tell him, and here we see again, Shaul is constantly accepting other people's opinions. His servants tell him, let's seek out a person to play music for you, and you'll feel well. So, whenever you'll feel bad, he'll play music, and you'll feel good. Here we see a very important concept. Music can help a person out of depression. That's why when people ask me, am I allowed to listen to music on the 9 days? Am I allowed to listen to music during Sfiras Omer? Every year I try to stick it in my parsha sheet. If a person's suffering from depression, they should just do it privately. Don't walk around with music blaring. That person can listen to music. So Shaul says, fine, please find me a man who knows how to play nicely. Bring him here. So one of the lads, the unique one, who is always going to be there to speak bad about David, his nemesis, otherwise known as Doeg HaDomi, Doeg who behaved like an Edomite. He says, I saw a son to Yishai, the pious family, from Beit Lechem, your threat from Judea. He knows how to play music, and he is brave, what you're lacking now. He is Chayil, he is a man of war, he has understanding, Hashem is with him. Every word he's saying is to point out to Shaul, he has all the qualities you're missing now. He is trying to get Shaul to look at David badly. And the Chazal say how cursed are the wicked, that even when they do an act of kindness, they have to stick in their soul. Yes? He was. He had the weakness of Lashon Hara. Doeg was Abir Aroim, the great man on the Jewish court. And even so, you see, he had this weakness. So Shaul sends messengers to Yishai. He says, please send me David, your son, who who's out with the sheep. Wait a second. A minute ago we said he's a brave warrior, but he's not a man of war. He hasn't gone to war yet. Here we have contradictions, or seeming contradictions. Learning the story, you think David is how old? Give him 15, 16. He's a lad, right? He's going out against Goliath. But Shaul's reign is all of 2 years. And David is 30 years old when he takes the throne. So David has to be 28, 29, 29 and a half right now. Erev Tov. Baruch Hashem, good. Agreed. And not only that, the story lends itself to Shaul being king much more than 2 years. How do you fight so many wars and have so many things, as we will see now, happen? David does marry, and then he marries a different daughter. And then what? I didn't hear?
When David goes down to Achish,
but the Pasuk says he was there 7 months. But a different Pasuk says that he was there b'sdei plishtim shiva chodashim. That says... Right. The question is why it says the word yamim. Right. But it says shiva chodashim. Okay. You could interpret it that way, but I'm saying what we see from the Pasuk sounds like it says 7 months and a few days. Okay. Rashi is not talking over there about yamim that are juxtaposed with 7 months. In Bereshit? Lo avanti. I didn't hear. Yamim o asor. Doesn't say yamim ve kach v'kach chodashim. Fine, let's leave it. Say that it's a no. The story lends itself to Shaul being king for many years, and to David first being introduced to Shaul when he was much younger. But there's definitely sources and powerful sources. Seder Olam Rabbah, if I'm not mistaken, that learn the way I'm saying now. And it changes the story, and I think that it is the more traditional approach. I would think the more traditional commentaries go with this, and so we have to open our eyes to a totally different understanding, where the question is why Doeg would call David, he calls him a gibor, chayil, ish milchama, man of war. David is going to tell Shaul, I don't know how to use this. When he goes out against Goliath, he says, I'm not used to wearing this. Who knew about that? Who knew about it? Okay. Huh? Okay, maybe. So Shaul asks to send David, who is by the sheep. If Shaul knows he's by the sheep, then where's the great warrior? So Yishai sends gifts with David, and David comes to Shaul, and Shaul likes him a lot, to the point where David becomes his arms bearer. Shaul tells Yishai, I want David to stay here, I like him a lot. So whenever Shaul would feel bad, David would play music, and Shaul would feel much better. The Plishtim gather for war, and they've entered Judean territory, the heart of Israel, and they camp between Socho and Azeka, and Shaul gather in a place called Emek Ha'ilah. So you have two camps facing off. The Plishtim are standing on one side of the mountain, on one mountain, and the Jews are on another mountain, and there's a valley in between. Now everyone knows that whoever charges is on the under side, right? Because both camps take the uphill advantage, and they're facing one another. And whoever's going to charge is going to have to fight an uphill battle. So both sides are waiting on two sides of the mountain. And in the middle, there's a valley. So there's a man whose job it was when they'd send messages from one another, he would go. And this man's name is Goliath. And Goliath is 6 amas tall. So let's say an amah is 2 feet, so he's a 12-footer. He's a very tall person. Our sages say he reached the sky. But the pasuk says 6 amos. And he wore a helmet made of copper, and he had armor that was, what do you call that? The knight's armor. Chain metal, right? Plates all one on top of the other. And just the weight of his armor was 5,000 coins. And he had shin guards on his feet, and he had guards around his neck, so if you try to hit him that way, you couldn't hit him. It says he also had a big nose piece that went all the way down, so if you try to get a knife in to hit him by his neck, you couldn't hit it, slice him this way or that way. He was almost impenetrable, and he was very powerful. He could carry all of this. His visor would have a strip of metal that went down to his feet. So you'd have a very hard time getting a sword down underneath to hit him, right? He had all these guards on every side. And he had a spear that was so big, it was like the beam that you used in a loom. This huge spear that he'd be wielding. And just the blade of his sword had 600 coins melted in. So it's this huge, powerful sword. And he has a man standing in front of him who's carrying a shield, a very big shield. So he's fully protected. The man carrying his shield is... Uriah the Hittite. That's the man carrying his shield. And he's standing there facing the Jewish camp, and he says... Not yet. He didn't convert to Judaism yet. We'll get there. No. That's in the lost medrash. So how do I know if it's lost? So he stands there and he goes to the Jewish camp and he says, why have this big war? I'll represent all the Philistines. You send one representative. Whoever wins, the other side is their slaves. And no one dared answer him. And he says, whoever could fight me should win. Whoever should fight me should come out and let's face off. And obviously he's not willing to come up to the Jewish camp. He keeps walking in that no man's land in between. And every day he goes out cursing the camp. Now, this is a big shame to Shaul, because the Jewish king is supposed to lead us to war. That's what Hashem told Yahushua. Don't sit behind. And Shaul has met Goliath a few years earlier when Goliath killed the two priests, Hophni and Pinchas, and then he went to the ark and took out the tablets, the Luchos. So Shaul ran up to him. Shaul was also very tall, and grabbed them out of his hands. So once upon a time, Shaul was willing to stand up to Goliath. Now Shaul has lost his confidence. Hashem hates him, he tells him. Hashem's his enemy, Hashem tells him. So he would blaspheme every day, and every day he'd come out towards our camp and say, I'm putting you all to shame, no one dares stand up to me, and he would blaspheme. So David, his father, sent him, and his father sent him with a very special request. And with this we'll conclude for tonight. His father says to him, your brothers are out at war. Goliath is known that whenever he can, he mutilates the body of those that are dead so that the Jewish women can never remarry. They won't know if their husband was captured, he's a fugitive, or he's dead. So he is exceptionally cruel. I want you, when you go to war, when you're going to the front, you're going to visit your brothers, you take back from them, each one will write a divorce contract for their wives. And they'll write like this: if I get home from war peacefully, so then this contract is null and void. But if the war ends and I don't come home peacefully, you are hereby divorced from today. Because he can't say you'll be divorced then. Maybe you'll be dead then. He can't divorce her when he's dead. So he's saying, I'm divorcing you now if I don't make it home in peace. So Yishai is a tzaddik. He wants to take care of his daughters-in-law, make sure no one's lost. And David will institute this for his whole army, that everyone has to do this. Yes? I didn't hear you. Who said we don't? Okay. It's a long question, a long answer. We're taking a huge halachic concept and just saying it simply.
Back.
Okay. Okay. No. Let's learn together for 3-4 years. We'll learn the Talmud and Yevamos and Ksuvos and Kiddushin and Getin. And after we finish that, we have to learn Rambam, Tur, Shulchan Aruch. And by then, you'll have the answer. After we learn the Nachlas Sheva. But let's move on. So David is young. His three older brothers are at war. He comes and brings them food. He brings food for their captain. That's something you guys should do if you'll have children in the army. Make sure to also take care of their mifaked, their general. And David goes bright and early. He ensures that he has a guard watching his sheep. And he does exactly what he's told. And he enters the camp. And David runs to bring his brothers food. And he asks how they're all doing. And as they're in the middle, suddenly he hears Goliath speaking the way he did. And everyone who saw him would run away. Everyone who saw him would run away. They didn't want to be there. He'd say, like, "Yeah, hey, you, why don't you come down here? Oh, you're a chicken, huh?" So the Jews would start talking and saying, "Look at how he's blaspheming, putting us all down. Whoever kills him, the king says, will make him very wealthy and let him marry the king's daughter, and he'll make his whole family free of taxes." So David says, "What did the king say? Whoever just knocks him down, we just have to remove the shame from the Jewish people. Who is that pitiful, uncircumcised Philistine? Why should he curse God's camp?" So they said, "This is what the king said he'd do to whoever kills him." So his big brother hears how David keeps going around and asking, "What did the king say? What did the king say?" He's trying to get people inspired. He's saying, "He's going to give so much for such a simple thing." And David keeps on going and asking everyone. He wants to make a buzz so that someone will get up and do it. And his brother gets annoyed and he says, "What'd you come down here for? Who'd you give the sheep to? I know your bad heart. I know how evil you are. You just wanted to see action. That's what you came here." David said, "Did I say anything? I'm just asking people. Well, who did I harm? What did I do?" He goes on. And everyone keeps telling him the same thing. And David says, "I would do it. What's the big deal? Why are you all scared? I would go." And Shaul hears that David said that. So Shaul calls him into his tent. Now, we'll pick up here. Bezat Shem next week.